Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and our favorite video games. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are you doing today, Matt?
Please don't record a bad cover of In the Air Tonight and put it on YouTube. Please, I'm begging you.
I mean, I won't. I could.
Not just you. Not this won't. Is universal. This is for everyone. If you are, like, you're walking along and you're like, I'd like to do In the Air Tonight, but I want to do it like a ska fusion with, like, extra.
Don't you badmouth ska.
No, there's nothing wrong with ska. In the Air Tonight should not be ska. There are songs that shouldn't be ska. There are songs that shouldn't be metal. There are songs you just shouldn't touch. Unless you are, you know, Johnny Cash. And if you are Johnny Cash, thank you for listening to our Lord podcast from beyond the grave, sir. But no, just don't. just do not do this.
Matt and I were having a discussion prior to the recording of this podcast talking about a couple songs that we felt were not great to be covers in the way that they were covered, but that's not what you're here for. You are here for us to discuss lore, and we are going to be doing some questions, especially since very recently, at the time of this recording, I think it's only been a few days, we got the 9.2 trailer reveal, like, and then developer discussion.
The deep dive discussion.
And as a result, you've had several questions for us, and we are going to wind up going through them. And if you do have questions for this podcast or the other podcast, be sure to send them in to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. If you are a Patreon subscriber, you can go ahead and pop on our Discord channel. We have a Patreon Q and podcast questions. Several of our questions this week actually came from there. We tried to give our Patreon supporters a little bit of a thank you by making sure they have priority on questions asked to us as a way of saying thanks for supporting us and allowing us to do the things we do. If you can't support us on Patreon, we do have another Q and podcast channel that's for non-Patreon subscribers that is open to everybody. And you can go ahead and put those in there as well. And normally I would do this at the end of the show, and I probably will still do this at the end of the show, but I'm going to do it right now. As a reminder for those of you that are listening, Blizzard Watch is a completely fan-driven website product. Everything we do is funded through Patreon. As of right now, we are actually below our normal operating level, and that makes it very difficult for us to keep doing the things that we are doing. We understand that money is tight for everybody, times are tough, but if you are listening to our content and you enjoy it and you can do so, please consider joining our Patreon over at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. That allows us to do shows like this. This allows us to do shows like the Blizzard Watch podcast. It allows us to do shows like Tavern Watch, which we've really enjoyed doing. And we want to continue to do these products and make this content and provide them to you, our listeners. And it is something that we really feel strongly about, and we hope that you feel strongly enough to continue to support us. Again, thank you very much for those of you that do. We do appreciate it, because without you, we wouldn't be here. But without further ado, we're going to go ahead and get into a set of questions. Our first question comes from Lord Soth. Lord Soth here. So I'm listening to yesterday's stream. This is from 11.9, so it's been a bit. And hearing you guys talk about time travel. What if the next expansion starts with us in the future, like 1,000 years in the future, and the 0.1 and 0.2 patch are horrible dystopian future? Then the 0.3 patch, we figure out how to go back to our time, and now we have to stop the future from coming to pass. Matt, how do you feel about time travel?
I love time travel, but I don't like when the same three storylines get done in time travel over and over again. Various, like going to a dystopian future, seeing that it's dystopian, and then going back to try and fix it. Goes back to Albert Finney in the third level. I mean, it's the whole premise of Time After Time, the H.G. Wells focused time travel story. The Time Machine by Wells is about that. I mean, he was basically saying, look, what's going to happen with the runaway capitalism? We're going to have these monster people, and we're going to have these Eloi who don't even, you know, it's been done a lot. The Terminator is that, you know, I mean, I'm not saying it couldn't work and it couldn't be fun. But personally, if they were going to do it, like we're 1,000 years in the future, I'd love it if we ended up in an Azeroth that was just super awesome, not necessarily without dangers and perils, because, you know, that's what we do. That's kind of my gig. If we go to a place that's like full of nothing but sunshine and happiness, I yell at things and hit them with weapons. I feel like I'd be out of place. Does anybody need anything yelled at or hit? No. We're all living in peace now. We pacifist orcs of the pacifist orc clan. Are there any non-pacifists? No, we're all pacifists. Okay. My friend here, I guess he can heal the wounded. Oh, no one gets sick or wounded here. You know, like, okay, what are we supposed to do here for three patches? You know, so I would like there to be stuff, you know, there'd be stuff to do. Like, there'd be adventure in dangerous places and all that stuff. But it would be nice to see, like, to not see, oh, hey, we're in a dystopian future that we have to go back and prevent from ever coming to pass. It would be nice to be like, oh, we're in a really nice future. Not utopian, perhaps, but there they pulled it off. Unfortunately, it was 1,000 years from our, you know, I'm reminded of the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Because in that, Superman, as a boy, he was, you know, in his teenager years, he met these three teenagers who knew he was, you know, what he was. They knew he was Kryptonian. They knew he had superpowers. And he was like, what? What would, you know, how do you know this? And they eventually revealed, oh, we're from 1,000 years in the future, a future that's very much based on, you know, your legacy. You want to come see it? And then he's like, yes. Okay. And so he goes to 1,000 years in the future, and there it is. It still has adventures and wonders and dangers, but it's, you know, Earth has united. There's this United Federation, like not the United Federation, that's Star Trek, but there's the United Science Earth thing. There's the United Planets. There's a lot of stuff going on, and it's cool and amazing, but it's also, you know, in the words of Q, it's got, you know, stuff to satiate the senses, but it's not for the timid. There's like space whales and evil supervillain organizations. There's stuff to do in the future. And he hangs out and joins their group for a while. And it's really cool for him because it's at that time in his life, he hadn't met anybody else with powers. He didn't know anybody like himself. So it was a way for him to get to experience. This is kind of what your life will be like without, you know, because it's 1,000 years from now, it's not that hard for him not to find out too much. Because, you know, A, they don't want to show him too much and have him screw up the future. And B, some stuff was lost. Things happened over the course of 1,000 years. And that's the kind of thing I think we could really, it would be really cool if you go to the future and, you know, they don't necessarily remember the Alliance or the Horde, but they might know about you, you know? And I hear a lot from people that they don't like in WoW that they're so powerful and heroic that they miss the days of, like, hunting rats in cellars. And I've never really believed that for myself. I don't feel that way. But I do think it'd be a cool way to have your cake and eat it too. Because 1,000 years in the future, sure, maybe your legacy is enshrined. You're the Maulwalker. You're the one who defeated Deathwing. But nobody recognizes you. You know, nobody like looks at just some person standing around there and thinks, oh yeah, that's the person who did X, Y, Z. And, you know,
and even if they do, yeah, like, oh, that person's just dressed up like them in celebration of whatever, because that's a thing that happens sometimes.
Yeah. And so you could have this completely anonymous experience where you see the world that, you know, you and other heroes like you shaped, but nobody really knows you. If you tell people your name, they're like, oh, yeah, like, yeah, okay, that's, yeah, sure you are. No, really, I am. Oh, yeah, okay. Look, I got some rats in the basement. You want to go take care of them? I can give you a couple of aluminum pieces. Aluminum? Does it spend, I guess? All right, sure, why not? I've killed rats in basements before. You know, I don't dislike the idea of us going to the future. I'm kind of tired of, oh, everything's broken and horrible.
Yeah.
We got to make sure this doesn't happen. That's nothing against you for suggesting it. It's just not something I personally am too interested in seeing.
And I'm kind of in the same camp, right? Like, I don't mind the whole idea of time travel, but I'd like to have a different twist on it. And to me, it's just the dystopian thing is sort of, I don't want to say overdone. It's very omnipresent, right? It's something that happens a lot. And it's a very easy place to go. And I think the harder storytelling, the more interesting storytelling, is if the world isn't broken. It isn't a dystopian future. Like, one of the, not to go like completely off to the side, it's a horrible movie, but one that I absolutely love is Demolition Man. And it starts with the basic concept of the world is fixed-ish. Mostly. It's not dystopian. There are some that are being pushed underground or whatever, but at the surface level, people don't get sick. There's no longer disease. I still don't know what the three seashells does or how you work it, but that's a thing that happens there too. But it's not fundamentally broken from the start. And I think that style of storytelling is harder. It's very easy to like step outside of a time machine and the world is on fire. We did that with the End Times when we started going through the End Time raid, right? When we start or dungeon, we started looking at like the different futures that could possibly come to pass. Those were all broken futures. Those were all things that were horrible. Instead, you know, maybe there's something sinister that lurks underneath, or maybe it's not as utopian as we think. And I think that becomes a more promising storytelling, I think, has potentially a higher payoff. And we can travel back and forth through time. You know, maybe we get to that point, we find out what's wrong, what the downsides are, and then our job is to go back and make sure it happens. Or now we know what we're fighting for, or we know that what we're trying to go and accomplish. Like, we have an idea. Because that's the other thing too, right? Everything we've done in Warcraft since the time the game went live is scrambling to pick up the pieces. It's reactionary. It never looks to the future. It's always in reaction to some great omnipresent threat. And to me, and this might be a minority opinion, it's we kind of lost track what exactly we're fighting for or what exactly we're trying to do. Everything's just been about base survival. Even now in Shadowlands, we're at the point where it's base survival. We're trying to keep the universe from being completely rewritten. And it's an omnipresent cosmic level threat. But what does that mean? And giving us a glimpse of the future, giving us a glimpse of something where, like, we succeed, now we have a carrot on the stick. We know what we're fighting for. We know what we're trying to accomplish. And we know that it's not futile, if that makes sense. Right? Because it's easy to say in 1,000 years in the future, everything is great or everything is awful. But our characters have no idea what 1,000 years in the future is going to look like. Heck, our characters don't know what 25 years in the future is going to look like at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Warcraft has gone through some very big cataclysmic changes multiple times, whether the opening of the Dark Portal with literally cataclysm happening, with the Legion storming back down. And these things have shaped the landscape, and these things have shaped societies and shaped like geopolitical borders. It's one of those things where, like, at the start, and it's only been, what, 17? It's been 17 years in game time. In that 17 years, a lot has happened that if you would have asked, like, a common person, what do you think tomorrow is going to bring? They're going to have no idea. They wouldn't have expected the Legion to come burrowing out of space. They wouldn't have expected Deathwing to come blasting through the crust of the Earth. Like, none of that stuff would have been expected. And I think that's part of the thing. We don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. So giving us a glimpse of what tomorrow is, I think would potentially be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, one way to think about it is, imagine if the past 120 years of human history had taken place in 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, go back and think of everything that's happened since 1900. You know, it's now 2020. Imagine you start in 1900. Everything that happened in that century and 20 years happened in 12 years instead. World War One, World War Two, the development of flight, the atomic bomb, you know, travel to the moon, just all the various other wars and brush wars and events, 9/11, war on terror, war on drugs, all of it in 12 years. That's kind of what Azeroth did. Like, if you actually stop and think, if you go back all the way to Warcraft 1, you're looking at like maybe 30, 35 years at this point from Warcraft, the original Warcraft, to right now. And imagine Stormwind got destroyed. You know, orc invaders came through a portal from another world. They're still here. The Lordaeron got destroyed by undead. The Prince of Lordaeron became the Lich King and was leading the undead. Demons invaded. Demons invaded again. Just after a while, you sit there and go, wow, okay. But the big dragon who almost blew everything up was between demon invasions. Like, he was relatively sandwiched by demons invading. After all that, we just had an old god practically almost destroy the world. And then we immediately had to go step through a big hole in the sky and go to the land of dead people. It's like, what? There hasn't been a lot of breather space in this game. If you think about this world, this world people are actually living on, it would be nice to do an expansion that gave you some of the breather space that said, okay, we're in the future. Things have happened. This is the way it is now. And you don't have to like have the expansion be all about, here's another cataclysmic thing happening right now. Like, imagine, like, in the past, think about at the end of Legion. The end of Legion, we just managed to stop Sargeras from destroying the planet. And immediately a war breaks out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, couldn't you have waited, like, a week on this? Maybe take a month off, go to the beach or something? I just, my word. So, yeah, I think Joe's right. It would be nice to have an expansion where you get to look at what might happen in a positive manner. You might actually see some good things that you'd want to try and make happen or preserve. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that answers your question, but I think we're going to move on to our next one, which comes from our friend Roxy. And this one is, greetings, Watchers. It is I, Roxy, Goblin Shaman from Hyjal, US. With the reveal of 9.2 Eternity's End and the claims by the team that this marks the end of the current Warcraft chapter, this got me thinking. Eternity's End is also the name of the Night Elf campaign in Warcraft 3. The story of Warcraft was altered in incalculable ways with the release of Warcraft 3. What do you think the choosing to reuse the name Eternity's End will mean for the Warcraft franchise story moving forward? I definitely picked up on that when they mentioned that it was Eternity's End, because I played a lot of Warcraft 3. It's an interesting choice, and I think it is deliberate. I don't think it, some people have suggested that it's like an accidental retread, or that they just, you know, didn't look, but I'll point you guys back to episode 200 of Lore Watch, where we talked with Anne. And how they talk with the historians before they name anything. So they go, we want to call it Eternity's End. And if that wasn't intentional, the historian would be like, well, yeah, no, this is where we used it already. So 100% this was intentional. I would be willing to put money down on that. I think it's intentional because it's going to mark an evolution of the story. And we're already starting to see that a little bit with how we're getting some very candid discussions from the developers and the people that work on the game itself, where they're talking about essentially walking back the war side of Warcraft, because it's not really the only driving force anymore. And players didn't have that great of a reaction to it in Battle for Azeroth. It wasn't what they expected, because we went from war is central to Warcraft to, well, maybe there's other things that are more important, or there's other threats that have been larger. And we talk about the power creep of the game that keeps going up in threat level. I mean, honestly, the Alliance and the Horde, and Matt and I have talked about this before, I think we're going to start moving away from them being completely at odds with each other all the time. I know they're not going to be best friends. They're not going to be having tea parties and, you know, or anything like that. Maybe some of them will. I don't know. But it's not going to be all out war. It's not going to be hatred, kill on sight. I don't think anymore, because it can't be. Matt pointed out in the last question, like, how many times has the Legion invaded and demons have come to the Azeroth and just blown things up? We now know that there's infinite realms of death that exist everywhere, which means that there's an infinite number of afterlives, which means there's an infinite number of worlds out there. Our universe view was already large to begin with. It's just gotten even bigger. Like, it's the game keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It can't just be about war at home anymore. And I think that this is sort of, I don't want to say the finalizing of that type of story, but I think it is a deliberate naming convention that we're going to start moving in other directions that deal with other things. And it's not just going to be about orcs versus humans anymore. What do you think, Matt?
One of the biggest missteps, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, but in my opinion, one of the biggest missteps made in the Warcraft franchise was that the end of Warcraft 3 had a very deliberate setup for a different kind of world.
And they ignored it.
They had stood together against the Burning Legion. They had saved their world against a force that had destroyed countless other worlds. And while there wasn't peace, they weren't all friendly buddy, you know, people anymore. There was mutual respect for that moment and a chance to make something with it. And because World of Warcraft decided to immediately go with factions and making factions important as a gameplay element, not a story element. In the story, you could easily have had a world where the factions still existed in story without having it involve the characters. Like, it never had to be something where you can't play with this person because this person is an X and you're a Y. That did not have to be the case. They chose to make that the case. As a result, I think that really kept the story from going anywhere because it spent, I mean, when you start playing it, it spends like the first 2.5 years of World of Warcraft simultaneously trying to tell the stories from both faction sides. So you have completely different quests for each faction, obviously. And yet, you know, why don't they, if they're just going to be hostile, why aren't they fighting? Like, well, we're moving towards the fighting. And it's like, then that's what you're doing. And it really did lose that, the chance to have a different world, the chance to have, like, to see what became of Azeroth when the Legion was dealt with and they had a moment of relative peace. I'm hoping that this, with Sylvanas, whatever her ultimate fate is, she's no longer anywhere near the leadership of the Horde. The Alliance has done some work to reclaim what they lost in Battle for Azeroth. Obviously, they won't have everything back,
including the relationship with the Night Elves, because that's been damn near destroyed.
Yeah. I feel like there's room. Maybe I'm hoping Eternity's End the second time around actually goes into exploring the differences between what came before and what we have now. It's like we had Thrall and Jaina going, like, what's different this time? And she said, we are. It's time for them to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for that. Be that difference. Show us how you're different. Show us how you're not going to make the same mistake. So I'm hoping that that's one of the reasons this is named that. I don't know. It could just be that they were like, that sounds cool. But I'm hoping that they're going to post this. We're going to have a different World of Warcraft. Not that you can't still have a World of Warcraft, but that it's going to be different, that there's going to be a move towards stories that don't force you down. Like, I feel like they understood this after they did it. The opening of Battle for Azeroth, the Horde attacking Darkshore. It wasn't just if you played a Night Elf or if you played an Alliance character that was bad for you because, you know, you lost something. It was that Horde players had no agency in it.
Yeah.
Your options were go do this thing or don't. Don't meant you didn't get to play. Like, there's all this new stuff and you don't get to play it because you think it's morally objectionable. They did stuff later in Battle for Azeroth. They had quests where you could work for Sylvanas or you could work against Sylvanas. They did more effort into giving the dissident players an option. Imagine if they'd let Horde players straight up rebel and go find there's like somebody like maybe Eitreg in Orgrimmar like pulls you aside and goes, listen, we need somebody to go there and try and stop this on the down low. Don't get caught. Don't let you don't want to cross Sorfang. Don't do something like that. But try and warn the people, try and prevent as much suffering as you can. We need to know what she's doing. They could have put that in there. And then now you go in and you do the different quests. And now you've got some agency. I feel like maybe we overuse agency, but in this particular case, I think it would have been something that would have been good. I think it would have been useful. But that's just my take on it. I don't know what them using Eternity's End really means, aside from the fact that it, you know, in a way, the Shadowlands are an eternal place. But come what may, I don't think they're going to be the same after this. I don't think there's going to be an Arbiter, because Sovall ripped the Arbiter's, like, the sigil out of the constructed Arbiter, reclaimed his position, and clearly has not actually doing it. So in a real way, there's no Arbiter anymore, and there might never be one again. So the Shadowlands, as they have existed eternally, might be done, especially since we're going to have our hands on a Forge of Afterlives. You know, what is that going to mean? Are we going to make a new afterlife? Is there going to be a new Shadowlands when we're all done? I don't know.
Oh, that's something for another topic later. I'm writing that down. but yeah, again, just to circle back, I do think that Eternity's End is a deliberate choice, and I don't think it was I think it will mean something. And as we move through this particular, as we move through 9.2, we'll understand more clearly what that actually means. And we were asked another one, that if we think 9.2 is going to be the end of Shadowlands, it's going to be the end of the story, but we've already seen other expansions where the story of that expansion ends and the next content drop pushes us towards the next expansion, which,
yeah, almost certainly that's going to happen.
Yeah. And if you listen to the developer deep dive and Steve Denauser, he says flat out that they already know where they're going. So yeah, but hopefully that answers your question, Roxy. We're going to move on to our next one, which is from our friend Tetsemi. Question for Lorewatch. Water seems to be an important feature of the new zone, Xerath Mortis, and seeing it reminded me of the Veil of Eternal Blossoms from Mists of Pandaria. Coincidence, or could the Veil Waters be tied to, or at one time had been tied to, Xerath Mortis in a way we didn't discover yet? It is entirely possible, but...
Yeah, the thing is, it's always possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they could decide to do that, but we already have a pretty in-depth explanation of the Veil Waters.
Yeah, we do.
But that being said, it is we still don't know the relationship of the Titans and the Eternal Ones of the Pantheon of Death. We know that there's a Pantheon of Order, which is what the Titans are, and there's a Pantheon of Death, which is these guys. We don't know the relationship. The Winter Queen calls Alun her sister, and the Alun speaking through Taranda and the Winter Queen have a conversation where they speak to each other as siblings. But we still don't know what a loon is. There's a lot we don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, and that's really kind of the key to it, is like Xerath Mortis is a place that even while we're going there, we're probably going to understand precious little of what actually is going on there. Part of the, as they sort of described it, is that us moving through that zone is learning the language, learning everything about it, and trying to figure out how we can penetrate into where Zilval is doing what he's doing to get to that engine of the afterlife, essentially. Which also, if it's just an engine of the afterlife, why would he want it? How does that have the ability to rewrite the entire universe? There's a lot going on here. But
yeah, there are certainly some implications in terms of what's going on.
Thematically though, water has always been an element of life in the Warcraft universe. Let's go back to like early shaman. Even in the descriptions of them, they used powers and abilities granted them from their ancestors of spirit, but also elementals of water to heal. This is why for a long time, a lot of the shaman effects were water-based. It was very thematically, like it was about healing, about life, about regeneration. And when you look at some of the other societies that revere water, it's very much the same thing. Even with the Veil of Eternal Blossoms, it's almost like a cradle of life when it comes to that particular well, the Well of Eternity, the Sun Well. These are all places that have a theme of fonts of power that revolve around water, essentially. And I think it's very fitting that Xerath Mortis is a place that uses water as a barrier. At least that's what it's being described as. And so just to kind of like 2-cent story it, I guess. When they described how we view this place, we're sent there. We wind up getting there. It's an entirely white, large white expanse that we have to run through, but we're running on top of water. And a lot of people are like, oh, so what? My shaman can do that. Or, you know, I have water walking potions, whatever, big, no big deal. But it's this sort of representation of what it actually is. When you get to Xerath Mortis, the water is a barrier between the zone of Xerath Mortis itself, this pocket dimension that was created to house the engine of the afterlife and be the workshop for the first ones to do what they did. So it's a pocket even further out of space and time, but it sort of acts as that barrier, that defensive layer between the primordial stuff around it. The primordial stuff that, in my guess, would be what they actually use to craft or pull into reality and mold it to what they want, or in this case, create the afterlives.
You'll also notice that the zone itself is described as having a lush zone and an arid zone.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, there's a dead place and a living place. One seems to be where the experimentation and design goes, similar to a Titan zone like Un'Goro. But the dead zone seems to be, like, for lack of a better word, it's where the power is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's interesting. Why is it that the place where the power is coming from is dried out?
And there's some similarities there too with what we've already seen in Azeroth as well. Like look at the places of great Titan power, the great Titan facilities and what's around them. We know that, you know, in case of some of them, it's caused by origination beam firing, but it never really fully recovered. And these places are just still immensely powerful, but still very barren. And is that tied to it? It's an interesting setup. And it's one of those few moments where it's like, I'm sitting here thinking about it and I don't know if the water will be important or not, or if it's the absence of the water, like Matt's pointing out, that is the more important factor. So anything else you want to say about Xerath Mortis?
I mean, there's a lot to say, but we have more questions. So.
All right, let's move on to our next one. And this is another one from Lord Soth. We got the dev update about 9.2, and a particular phrase stuck out to me. They said Zoval was trying to rewrite the fabric of existence. It got me thinking, what if we beat/stop him, but he's already altered some things? I feel like this could be a bit of a sneaky way of Blizzard using this moment to in-narrative retcon/alter/change things about lore of the world. Do you think that Blizzard might use this to do some type of reset or rewrite on some aspects of the story that they want to alter, whether they be related to the renaming, removing problematic parts of the game, or things they just feel like changing? What do you think, Matt?
Well, I mean, they've pretty much showed that they don't need any kind of pretext to change things that they decide to rename or remove or what have you. Does this mean that they're not going to do that? No. It's quite possible. It might even be likely. I don't feel like I can tell you, yeah, they're doing that. No, they're not doing that. No one's told me anything, clearly. That being said, yeah, if they decide they want to do a soft reboot of the world, that could be one way to do it. And we would know, we would not, since we're in the Shadowlands, we might not even know it had happened until we go back. You know, it is something that they could do. That could, in fact, be the pre-expansion event for next expansion, is going back to Azeroth and it's not the same.
Mm.
That is possible. I do not know that that's what they're doing. I have no evidence one way or the other. But I feel like I would be being disingenuous if I said, nah, that's not going to happen. I have, you know, it could, in fact, be what's going to happen. Well, we will find out. That being said, I do think we're probably... It is more likely, in my opinion, that they won't do that any kind of major thing like that, just because it's the order of magnitude of complexity that would entail in terms of getting it implemented into the game world. And they just did a whole thing making all the previous expansions usable, like as leveling expansions. A lot of that stuff would be changed, and then you'd have to figure out, okay, Which parts were changed and where. And it is a lot once you start pulling at threads like that. Just look at what happened with Cataclysm, and they didn't even retcon anything, really. They just moved things forward a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that, like how much work it took. Could they do it? Yes. Would they do it? I don't know. It is certainly something I think is possible. Joe?
I don't know that it's going to be an agency of retcon as far as that goes, or altering the past. And I think maybe we need to look towards the future. Going back to like the first question, traveling 1,000 years in the future and learning what happens to Azeroth is all fine and dandy. But what happens if at the end of this, we stop Zoval in the middle of doing whatever he's doing, and we happen to stop him at the point of unraveling, beginning the unraveling process? He hasn't stitched anything together yet. He's just starting to pull it apart. And if none of the other folks in the Pantheon of Death, who seemingly took all four of them to stop him the first time, and now we know Denathrius is on his side, we know that he definitely has elements of other forces that he can call on if he really, really needed to, which he probably would. So they don't even have all four of the other Pantheon of Death to help. Plus, his forces have grown exponentially with all the souls he's been fed. He's made whole again, totally. If nobody else can wield that power, does the unraveling of the universe become the starting point of the next expansion? And does it become a race of us trying to find the last first one, or find the Titan that can, you know, step in or work with the Pantheon to stop the unraveling of the universe and put things back in some sort of semblance of I don't want to say normalcy, but just something that's not completely destroying itself.
Also, there is actually another possibility there, though. Mm-hmm. We can use first one life way gates.
We absolutely can.
It's quite possible we do that. Like, we might, that might be the end of this expansion, as we step in and we reformat things as best we can. And since we're not, you know, we're not Eternal Ones or First Ones or Titans, that might not go exactly the way we wanted it to. If they wanted to, like, work in changes in a way that is rooted in, you know, why are things different now? That is one possibility. The other possibility that Joe just laid out is another thing that might happen. It might even touch into why he wanted Azeroth. Mm-hmm. Because he wanted Azeroth. He said so. He had his minions say that he was going to claim the world soul of Azeroth.
And we still have no idea why everybody wants Azeroth. We don't. We know everybody does. Why?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, fair enough.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but like,
you got a point there. We don't know what the deal is. We know that Azeroth is important. We know the whole final Titan thing. What does that mean, the final Titan? What is Azeroth? Besides being like a very powerful Titan, is Azeroth something more than a Titan? And to what end will that be going forward?
Yeah, there's a lot that could be done with this. And my hope is that the 9.2 Eternities and with Zoval going after the Forge of the Afterlives, and doing what he's doing in Xerath Mortis, becomes a catalyst of moving forward. And I want us to have more varied, more expanded stories. I want us to have more varied things that happen, but at the same point, pushing us forward while we're learning about some things that have been threads that have been dangling for almost two decades in this game. You know, like as I said, like, we don't know why Azeroth is important. I'd love for us to start actually figuring that out. Why was Sargeras so, you know, enamored with Azeroth? Why did the Pantheon take such great strains to, you know, make sure that Azeroth, for lack of a better term, stayed okay in her cocoon? Is it just because it happened to be another Titan? Or is it something more than that? Because we don't know. We don't know what the intentions were. We don't know what that means for anything else. There's that point where Rathian eats the heart of Lei Shen and talks about rebuilding the final Titan. What does that mean? You know, there's so many things that we don't know that this could start being a catalyst for receiving the answers to. Because, again, this is a cosmic, cataclysmic, potentially event, and we're at the place where everything started. We're at the place where the first ones started doing whatever they did to create the universe, create the Shadowlands, order things, or start things on their path. And there might be hints here, or there might just be flat out, here's what it is. Part of the thing that gets me is we're going to be spending a lot of time learning the language of the first ones, essentially. What good is learning the language if you can't read the books or the tablets or the things that are going to be scattered around? And I know dang well that there's going to be, because most of the things we've interacted with over the years, how many things have been hidden in books that seem ominous just sitting on a table inside of a hut on the middle of a mountain that came back to be something later. That NPC, I can't remember his name, but the ogre, the mad one that had the journal entry that led us down to the path of N'Zoth years later. There's so many little tiny things that they hide in game like that. Language is important. And with us learning the language, I want us to be like finding out things, like maybe coming across a workbench with notes from one of the first ones or something like that, where it's like, you know, add one part Titan, one part light, one part void, have entity comprised of all elements of the universe and go forth. The other interesting thing too is, and this might be a little sidetracky as well, I also find it really interesting that there's going to be Constellars in here. Like, we always knew that Constellars were tied to the Titans in some manner. We knew that they were a race that existed. Well, now they're here too. They're in Xerath Mortis. What does that mean? Were they created by the first ones? Were they created in a manner to be custodians for their creations or caretakers?
Well, here's the thing too. Keep in mind that we know that the Constellars are involved with Titan facilities. Like, for instance, Algolon was summoned to Ulduar. We also know that Helya had a Constellar.
Yep.
Harboron.
Yep.
How did she get it? Did she like summon it? Did she corrupt it? Like, why was Harboron there?
And we know that they can be corrupted now.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is this thing here because of the deal Odin made? Is he there because he gave his eye and thus by having the eye of Odin turned into the eye of the jailer now had access to titanic things? Like, there's a lot to this that we don't know yet. That's just one possibility. It may not even be. They might be there because the Constellars might actually serve the Titans, but they serve the Titans because the Titans are the power in the mortal plane. There might be Constellars in every plane where there's powers to be served. There could be light Constellars inside the actual light. There could be in the realms of life. There could be life Constellars. There could be fell Constellars that we've just never seen, you know? We don't know. And for that matter, fell Constellars might in fact be some other demon form. The equivalent of Constellars might be like Pit Lords.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know. We have not seen enough to make that judgment yet. There might be void Constellars.
That would be fascinating. So,
yeah, I mean, this is all just type supposition. I don't have an answer, but I do think it's interesting to think about what that Constellar means in terms of like what the relationship is between the Eternal Ones and the Titans and beings like Ilun, who seem to basically travel between both groups. Like, Ilun's obviously got some kind of relationship with the Winter Queen, and Ilun was also obviously involved in the ordering of Azeroth because it wasn't anything to do with Aenar. It was the Tear of Ilun.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the pillars. And when we find Aenar, she's on a world called Ilundris.
And when we get the new tier that's created in Shadowlands, because there is very clearly a new tier that's being created, because it's what's used to jumpstart the Heart of the Forest, it's created by Ilun inhabiting the body of Tyrande as the Night Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
It's her tier. Like, there's a lot going on.
Yep.
And honestly, like, questions aside and everything else aside, this is the part where I really start digging and enjoying what's going on, because there's so much potential here and there's so many things of where the story can go. There are so many pieces that might be important or might be nothing or might be ending of one story or might be a thread that's going to get pulled later. Like, this is the part where I get excited because I honestly don't know where it's going to go. And speculation is fun and all, but I love the surprise of it. I love the idea that we have no idea what's hurtling down. And that's the same thing with, like, with Zoval, with Xerath Mortis, with everything that's going on there. Is this is a wild card in terms of everything else we've dealt with. Everything up through the last expansion, we knew what the goal was. Like, all we know about Zoval wants to do is rewrite the fabric of existence so everything bows down to him. What does that actually mean? Like, what does rewriting the fabric of existence actually mean? And what context does that become a reality with what we're about to deal with? How does that happen? And we're starting to learn some, like, it's like some inside baseball stuff, and I absolutely adore it. But I think we can move on to our next one. This one. Hello, watchers. While exploring Korthia, I looted the ever-living statuette, which provides fun whispers while it is in your bag. Any thought on what these Ilganoth-style whispers could be hinting at? Looking it up, there are a number of whispers that you do get, and I'll kind of go through them real quick. How many voices do you heed? How many are real? A City of Secrets, A History of Lies. Hope, Betrayal, Sacrifice, Faces Change, The Tale Does Not. So many secrets, so little time left to share them. Hidden from daylight, a sleeping flame rests atop the sixth. Let's see. Yeah. So like, oh, and the seventh covets what the sixth holds fast. The fulcrum wavers, all will be undone. There's some good Ilganoth style whispers in there. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry. A City of Secrets, A History of Lies. I mean, it could be, you know, any city. These are super vague. I think once we actually start seeing stuff, we'll notice the idea of like the hidden flame, a sleeping flame lives atop the sixth tree. That definitely feels like it's aimed towards world trees, you know.
It does. But,
I mean, I don't know if you could say that what happened to Teldrassil was pretty sleeping. I mean, or is it hidden? The thing is, it is hidden from daylight, right?
It is. It was supposed to be.
I mean, the moon canopies. Is permanently. Yeah. No. The moon is permanently up there. There's no daylight in that zone anymore. So if we're talking Teldrassil, which would be the sixth tree, the sleeping flame is hidden from daylight. What does that mean, though? Does it mean that the tree is going to catch fire again? Does it mean that the fire that destroyed the tree is metaphorically also the fire that nearly consumed the world and it's still waiting to burst forth again? I don't know. But there's a lot here to think about. It's similar to, like, as you pointed out, it's similar to the Ilganoth things, like the whole idea of the ring submerged in water.
Mm-hmm.
The seventh covets what the sixth holds fast. The fulcrum wavers, all will be undone. What does that mean? Like, is who the sixth? What, the six trees? Or is there something else? Like, is it like a new pantheon? Like, or is it a new figure? Like, with the eternal ones, we've only got five of them. So yeah, I don't know. Like, there's a lot to this. I'm sure there's like stuff that could come up. I'm sure you have some ideas. So
I mean, I honestly don't. And the only thing that really struck with me is what the ever-living statuette looks like. So it's the flavor text is the events that the statuette have witnessed would boggle the mind. One could learn a lot from it if only it wasn't so duplicitous. So the interesting thing is it's modeled after those hooded figures that framed the dark portal, just without any swords. And I think, interestingly enough, it's modeled after an old Anglo myth, at least from everything that I can see descriptions for it, of the Watchers in the Dark. And the Watchers in the Dark were supposed to be these entities, these hooded figures, kind of similar to, like, if you want to go like funny about it, Jawas, but just less scavengery, that would watch historic events unfold. They would be present at all the historic events that happened to sort of record it and sort of like preserve the memory of those events so that it was always recorded for eternity. And it seems very interesting that the statuette is very clearly in that form of that hooded figure, that hooded watcher figure. So this might not mean anything. This might not be anything that for moving to the for like for future stuff. This literally might be just something recounting things that have already happened. This could be things that it has seen throughout history of the universe. We don't know where it came from. This could have come from Draenor. This could have come from Azeroth. This could have come from, you know, the Shadowlands itself. It could have been something that found its way here or was crafted by somebody who came here and, you know, made it. I don't know how else to really phrase it. And it's also interesting because the Pillager is a soul cage construct the army of the Jailer. So it's entirely possible that this is the collected memories infused into this item of the souls that were shredded and shoved into this cage. So there's a million things it could be, or it could be nothing at all. But I do find it always fascinating when they put items in the game that give you whispers, because half the time it sends us on a wild goose chase. The idea that it is a duplicitous item that may not be telling us the complete truth, maybe because it doesn't understand what the complete truth is, because again, perception shapes everything. Maybe it will not hint at something new to come. Maybe it's just talking about historical events. Hope that answers your question, Vol'dan, who is a Zandalari troll from Rune Totem. Our next question, and I think is going to be our last one, comes from Jesse Lynn from Bleeding Hollow. Hi, Matt and Joe. First off, I want to thank you guys for making my daily commutes to work much more exciting. And they've been a longtime listener. This is their first question. So first, you're welcome. And second, thank you for sending a question in. This is a question regarding some lore revealed in the 9.2 developer update. After finding out about how part of the zone progression will be finding out the meaning of the runes and symbols in the cipher of the first ones in order to translate what the automa are saying, I couldn't help but think about how those symbols look awfully familiar to the ones that are on Zira's head. And they've included a picture here. Do you guys think that this is foreshadowing that Alun is in fact one of the first ones? Or that the Naru have some kind of tie to Xerath Mortis, have some kind of tie to the progenitors or the first ones? Or am I just overthinking this much? I don't think that's far off base. Go ahead, Matt. Sorry.
No, I'm just going to agree that it comes down to that whole thing where it could be the case. It's certainly possible that that's where they're going. We don't know what they're doing, but it is not beyond them to deliberately make symbols look similar to other symbols just to get the ideas across to people. We still have a lot to know about the Naru. We've heard that at the ordering, there's that whole thing about with the ordering of the beginning of the universe, the Naru were created. They were part of the ordering of the cosmos. If the first ones ordered the cosmos, then it would make sense that the Naru would have a connection to them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just, you know, if these are the guys who did the ordering, then it would make sense that the Naru were related to that. In similar to like the one idea I've seen is one of the reasons that the Titans, when they quote unquote die, don't go to the Shadowlands is because the Titans might be the first ones reborn, or there might be a connection between them. That, you know, we know that the Titans come into existence as like motes of cosmic order hurled into our reality. Creating a universe is pretty orderly. And it's interesting that it seems to have happened in the Shadowlands, that Xerath Mortis is in the Shadowlands. As far as we can tell, it makes worlds. It's they call it the Forge of Afterlives, but it might be more like it might actually make worlds. As Joe has pointed out, if it can reorder reality to that level, you know, why else would he want it? That's what he seems to be trying to do. Is he just trying to reorder, like, you know, the Shadowlands, or is he trying to reorder everything? And how is it going to work? There's a lot to this that we don't know. We don't know what the first ones are. We've got nothing on them other than that they existed and they made this place. And it's called the Sepulcher of the First Ones. Usually a sepulcher is a monument or a tomb.
Yep.
for dead people. But we don't know that the first ones could die as such. It's possible that this goes into, like, this is not specifically Warcraft, but we've seen that you know, Blizzard has tapped into this idea before. We've seen it in Diablo. We've seen it in StarCraft. This is basic concept. There's a concept in Hermetic and Kabbalist thought that the universe only exists because the entity that was everything was nothing because it was everything. The idea that, you know, until there are divisions, until there are things you are not, you by definition you don't have any distinction. It's invariated. There's nothing to know because there's nothing, because everything is the same. And the only way to learn oneself in this situation is to create divisions, to create distinctions, like the idea of the plane of separation, where you separate all the good from all the evil. And now you've got these things are good, these things are evil. Now you've got a distinction, or you separate all the light from all the shadow. Before, if you don't separate the light and the shadow, then you don't have light and shadow. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like if everything is just luminous, then there's no shadows because everything is just this luminous stuff. But there's no light because A, there's nothing to see it anyway. So even if there is light, there's nothing there. And B, if everything is the same, it's not lit, you know? And so there's that concept of separation being the means to ultimately the universe learning and understanding itself, that it fits in with what we know about the origin of the light and the void, that the void came from eddies in the light, and the light, you know, became more concentrated and began casting shadows. That's that's part of what we've been told in the past. We don't know if it's still considered valid. Like the thing is, the Grimoire of the Shadowlands that came out is written by brokers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's written in an attempt to understand the mortals that are coming through into the Shadowlands. It is no more authoritative than the Chronicle books, especially the one that seems to be written from the perspective of the Titans and the Titanforged. All of these things are written from a perspective. So it's possible that the first ones, or perhaps even the first one, who knows, created the universe to gain a perspective because it wouldn't have had one before. And in the process, it created the various cosmic forces, the void, the light, fell, arcane, life, death. You know, these things came into existence because they were distinctive from each other. You could define something by them. And this whole process, souls going into the world and then coming back out as anima and then, feeding the Shadowlands and souls returning, that could be literally the first ones coming to understand themselves. And they very well may have entered our reality before as, say, Titans. That's one possibility. Perhaps when they did so, they sundered themselves and their essence also remained in the Shadowlands as the Eternal Ones. You know, it's quite possible that the reason that the Winter Queen and Alun are siblings is because the Winter Queen and Alun are the same being.
Yeah, and we've talked about that a little bit in the past, too, which there seems to be some potential synergy there, right? Like, and I don't know if we're gonna get anything that proves it or disproves it or whatever, but I always find it fascinating that the Pantheon of Death and the Titans all embody an aspect. And it's not that they're not complete, they are beings, but they all have something that they specialize in, and they all seem to have certain very personality characteristics. So what Matt's saying about, you know, what if this is all because the first ones were trying to understand themselves or understand essence of themselves, I could kind of see that. And we talked about there's some parallels with how Diablo was in their universe was formed with a great entity that split itself apart and then everything just kind of went down from there. But it's kind of like, what if that's the same thing here? What if the first ones were like, that's why the Shadowlands exist, that's made off of the flesh of the first ones, and that the Titans are an aspect of a first one or multiple first ones, or the Pantheon of Death are aspects of them. And that's why things like Alun and the Winter Queen are siblings, because like we've posited, maybe they were cleaved or cloven from the same essence, the same person.
Yeah, maybe one is that being dead, and the other is that being alive. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that there's a pantheon of life that we haven't seen yet. Is Alun in that? And is she the literal opposite of the Winter Queen? Does she have her court? And, you know, in that court, is Anshe there? Or is she both Anshe and Musha? Is she also the sun? Like, just because the Tauren think of them as different beings doesn't mean they are. Just Yep. because the Night Elves only worship the dark aspect of them, the moon aspect of Alun, doesn't mean that's all there is to Alun.
Yeah. You
know, we don't know. So it would be really interesting to find out more. But for right now, you're not off to be thinking about this. You're overthinking it if you just, you know, that's up to you. Do you spending some time thinking about this means you're not thinking about something else that's, you know, terribly wrong in the world. So I don't see a problem with thinking about this. It's like, yeah, it's definitely better than thinking about the other things going on.
Infinitely preferable.
Yeah. I honestly just, if you're having fun, if you're enjoying what you're doing, then there's no problem here. You know, if you spend literally like 80 hours in your basement with a chalkboard, not eating, not sleeping.
Don't Charlie Day it.
Yeah. Don't do that. But you know, spending a couple, you know, writing an email to a couple of jokers like us asking us, you know, hey, what do you think of this? That's perfectly fine. Hey, we encourage that. That's kind of our deal. So, yeah.
All right. But I think that's going to do it for today. So hopefully that answers your question. And Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast signing community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcasts, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. Again, folks, if you enjoy the content we produce, I do implore you to visit us at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch and consider consider supporting us if you can. Every few bucks does help and allows us to keep making shows like this, because running the site and keeping people doing content is not cheap. And without you, we can't do it. So please consider supporting us in that regard. If you do have,
I can imagine my eyes are huge and they're just kind of trembling a little bit. I'm holding hands up going, please, sir, because in a very real way. Yeah. Please, sir.
And we have some pretty awesome tier benefits. If you go into the higher tiers, if you're already a subscriber, take a look at them. There's stuff that, like, we write character backgrounds for you. Yeah. Hey,
they don't have to be World of Warcraft ones.
We can do it for anything.
Yep. We are that kind of people.
And we will do it for anything. So just please consider supporting it. And if you are already a supporter, we do thank you. And if you do have questions for us and you want to hear us answer them, be sure to send them in to podcast@blizzardwatch.com or hit us on one of our many Discord channels. And as a last reminder, Blizzard Watch does support all the employees at Activision Blizzard, demanding change for a better tomorrow and a safer work environment. In fact, we stand with everybody everywhere that's looking to do the exact same thing. But with that, thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.